This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. Well, we've got a lot to cover here today, and we have a most interesting guest that is sandwiched in between a whole lot of other stuff. Today, by the way, is known as Red Nose Day. You might see some people walking around with red noses, and if not, perhaps they might be wearing an armband or something like that. I believe it's Walgreens who are selling these red noses, and they're trying to raise money and awareness for children living in poverty. And what their website is saying is that $1 can provide food for a child, or it can provide school supplies for students in a developing country. $5 helps provide medical supplies or for a doctor's visit. $10 provides safe place for children during the summer, and it can also provide textbooks for a class of students. Anyhow, as you can, you might consider donating, and if you can and would like more information about that, just go to donate.rednoseday.org, and there will be a lot of things you'll be seeing about this here today. And again, today being Thursday, May the 24th, and this is the, again, official Red Nose Day. Anyhow, moving on, there was another thing, I guess, that's kind of topical, and that has to do with something that you may have heard, this controversy of whether that you can hear Laurel or Yanni. And it is kind of an interesting thing if you happen to run across one of these things to kind of see which one that you hear, because apparently one is kind of in a high pitch and the other one is a low pitch, and that you, depending upon your age, I think, you kind of hear one more clearly than the other. I'll strip out a couple of things. First of all, I'm going to take out the higher tones of this, so this way that you can hear just the lower note. Laurel. I think that was pretty clear. You can kind of hear that. But if you strip out that, which was overlaid on top of this higher pitch, you can hear the higher word, higher pitch word.
Yanni.
I think that's kind of clear, too. But when the two are meshed together, it's kind of hard to hear one over the other one. But if you strip out both the high and the low, there is one right about in the middle that sometimes not everybody can hear.
TheMagicWordPodcast.com.
Okay. Fine. That's fun. So, hey, another thing, by the way, too, have a something on a more serious note. It seems like we've had just a horrible week this past week. Death and dying, and that local fellow here in Houston who was well known throughout the magic world, Frank Price, passed away this last Saturday. On May the 19th. We're having his celebration of life service today, actually Thursday the 24th. And it was he was 80 years old and a stalwart and a pillar of our magic community, not only in Houston, but had also had a lot of offerings that have been in like Richard's Almanac and other places. He was an undergrounds magician, and he and Roger Klaus were very tight, very good friends, and now they'll be together. So we're mourning the loss of another fine magician over there. And I'd also heard that Alki van Dokken from the Netherlands, who makes cups and balls and fine coins and everything like that, is losing his battle to cancer. And apparently he's, the last I heard was that he is in a coma, basically is non-responsive at this point. And perhaps by the time that this his broadcast airs, it may be too late. But just so that you know about his health then as well. Well, today we're going to be talking with Raj Madok, and he was a mentalist who and close-up magician, a fine one on both regards, who I talked to when I was at the Albies 4F convention this year. And actually, he is not a professional magician. In fact, I had mentioned that he was a part-time professional, and he said, I want to make this clear that so people don't think that I am a professional magician in any way, shape, or form, because I rarely perform. And I said, yeah, but when you do, you perform as if that you are as good as a full-time professional. He said, well, yes, but which is what the definition is that Gene Anderson had made for the part-time professional. Nevertheless, He is a dermatologist in Minneapolis, Minnesota, and has been a contributor to a lot of mentalism publications over the years, including Lee Earle's Syzygy. And, of course, he was in Banachek's Psychological Subtleties 3, where he'd offered a few things. He has a couple of books that have been out, and he's got one which he's going to be offering to listeners. A couple of listeners are going to get a chance to win a free copy of his ebook, Mysteriouser and Mysteriouser. So wait until the end of the podcast. We'll give information on how that you can go to enter the contest for that. Again, a lot of stuff we got going on, including a review of a couple of items from Murphy's Magic Supplies. But first, I want to introduce my friend, Mr. Raj Madok, here on The Magic Word. Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. And, you know, it's always fun to talk with friends. And as you know, I like to refer to the Magic Word Podcast as not really being an interview with magicians. It's really more of conversations with conjurers, is what I like to call it. In other words, that it's going to be just some chats with friends. And I would say probably 95% of the people I talk to are people who I've known for a long number of years and who I respect. And I think also would have something of interest that they would like to share that I know that the rest of the listeners that you would like to hear. I mean, there are people I like to talk to, and I think that if you like listening, you'll like listening to these people as well. And one of them I've got sitting with me here. I am at the Obie's 4F convention right now and chatting with a few friends. And there was a fellow that I've been wanting to talk with for a long time and spend some more time with who is a master mentalist and has got a book out then also and several ideas. But he is one of these fellows that is not a full-time professional, but he is a full-time creator, I guess, because he's always thinking. Enough said. Let me just introduce you to my good friend, Rajesh Madok, or Raj Madok. Madok. Got it. Madok.
You got it. Madok. Thank you, Scott. Fun to be with
good
you.
Good to have you here, Raj. So we were just talking off air for just a moment ago that you just got back from L.A. You were at the Magic Castle or Academy of Magical Arts Awards Banquet.
Yes, I had the pleasure of taking a trip out for the weekend and went to the castle one evening. And the next night was the Academy's Awards Banquet, and that was quite fun.
Uh-huh.
A lot of people in presence and a lot of people at the castle the night before trying to get in because everybody from overseas was in town for the awards ceremony. It was quite a gathering.
People who were trying to get in, but they couldn't because...
Yeah, the castle was booked that evening, I think, well in advance. Even trying to get a reservation for dinner was difficult because the people who were coming from out of town and overseas obviously wanted to be in the castle as well the night before the ceremony, being a lot of people were in town for the event.
Right. That is just a lot of fun because you're saying it's not just in town from across the country, but all around the world.
Right.
You know, people
exactly.
who are coming in, you know, for that as well.
Yep. And I think the other thing was since it was the 50th anniversary of the award ceremony and David Copperfield was being honored as Magician of the Decade, there was a lot more interest in people coming.
Was Copperfield at the castle on that night before, just hanging out?
I didn't see him the night before, but he did come to the after party.
Mm-hmm.
And I did see people getting photographs with him in the driveway afterwards.
So the after party was at the castle?
There was a pre-party for those who wanted to take the shuttle from the castle down to the Orpheum in downtown L.A.
Mm-hmm.
And then upon the return, there was a post-party, which was actually quite extensive. I think they had enough overflow that they had the castle open with food and drink inside. But in addition, the lower parking lot space there down below the driveway.
Yeah.
They'd put down some astroturf and some bushes and made it look very nice and had buffets and an open air party there as well.
Well, the weather's always nice in LA.
The weather in LA was perfect.
Yeah, yeah. I remember it seems like the Academy Awards banquet. I watched the Oscars, I think, only once or twice. I've seen it rain or something. But typically, around this time of the year, it's just perfect.
Yeah, it was really nice. Uh-huh. And the awards ceremony, like most major awards ceremonies, ran long.
Yeah.
I think by my recollection, it was close to 3 hours.
Total?
I think
three
so.
Hours long.
Three
longer.
Hours total.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Larry Wilmore did a fantastic job as MC, and David Regal had written a lot of the material. And there was a very lot of, much like in the Academy Awards, sort of last minute jokes that came up in response to what was happening in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
So it had a nice fresh feel to it. I'd never been to one before, so for me it was so enjoyable.
Yeah. What'd you think? What was your experience?
I really enjoyed it.
Uh-huh.
They had some very interesting performers. They didn't have a lot of true magic performers that you and I would know. There was two very interesting acts that I really enjoyed. Both non-magical.
What
it's much like the juggler at the magic conventions where they hit. One was a very, very energetic, spunky, almost sassy young woman who did an incredible hula hoop act.
Okay.
And I know that sounds boring, and I would say I would never rave about a hula hoop act, but this was incredible.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So that was the best hula hoop act I'd ever seen. And there was a duo, I believe they were French because they had a French name, who did black art. And I'd never seen black art done live. It was really well done, very magical, amazing, fun, creative.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to describe in too much detail for those who've never seen it, and I don't want to go into the details of black art, but I was really, really enjoyed it and found it to be fascinating and fooling.
Did they take up most of the stage?
That did not. They had framed the stage with light bulbs in a smaller space, I'm mm-hmm. guessing maybe 30 by 20 yeah. feet or something like that. But it was a large stage, but no, it did not encompass the whole stage.
One of the things I think is interesting about the banquet, Academy of Magical Arts Award banquet, are not just the magician celebrities, but the Hollywood celebrities that come in. I mean, I know Dick Van Dyke was one of the presenters.
Right.
Didn't he present the one with David Copperfield?
He did, yeah. Okay. He actually was pretty spry, and they both did a little half step as they came towards each other on stage to pass off the award. I didn't see any other celebrities that I would have recognized. Perhaps there were.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm not attuned to those names, but certainly anybody who's anybody in magic in L.A. was there.
Because I remember, again, years ago, we were again talking off air before we started, that this goes back when Terry Seabrook was alive, and I was a guest of his, and he was given an award or something, Creative Fellowship or Performing Fellowship. Anyhow, the point was, I don't remember all the celebrities who were there, but I do remember Buddy Ebsen, who was there, you know, who was from those who are listening might remember him, Beverly Hillbillies.
Beverly Hillbillies,
yeah.
Yep.
That's, in fact, I guess I could tell it. So I was in the men's room.
Okay.
And he was
I'm
at
not
the,
sure where this is going.
He was at the urinal next to me.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's one of those things you don't want to, you know, you never talk to somebody, you know.
But you did?
No, I did. Okay. I didn't. I kept expecting, you know, him to say, doggy. You know? You know, and even after we came out and we washed our hands, I still didn't say anything. I thought, it just isn't the appropriate place.
Right, right. I didn't do the washroom there, so I didn't have any brushes with fame.
Well, you know, speaking of restrooms, on a completely off-topic kind of subject that I have heard and have learned and have tried, going into the restrooms after your show. Because a lot of times people, you know, when you're doing a corporate banquet or whatever, people are going to the washroom, and if you go and just stand in the stall with the door closed over there, that you hear comments because people who have just come out saying, hey, what'd you think of the magician? Or, well, he did this or that, or man, I didn't like this or that wasn't, or whatever. And you really get to hear the candid
instant
comments.
Instant critiques, yep.
Get some good
honest
critiques.
Honest instant critiques.
Right, right. And probably a good idea, although I haven't done it, it'd be a good idea also to record, you know, take a little pocket recorder or your phone or something to record some of those things that you might hear that you can then, you know, use later to kind of write some of these comments as heard. I don't want to say as heard in the men's room or whatever, but
as long as people don't realize you're carrying your active phone in there with your camera on.
Camera on, exactly. Yeah, yeah. Anyhow, just a little aside. So anyhow, that you went out there exclusively. Are you a member of the Academy of Magical Arts?
I'm not a member, but I feel every couple years
they should join.
The urge, right, that I should join also, that I need a castle fix, as I call it.
Yeah, yeah.
Just because the environment, the mood, the feel is such a nice way to be out there as a magician and meet other magicians. And it's really like a mini convention, right? Any evening you're there,
right,
there's always a large proportion of magicians who you might know or would like to know or would have liked to have spoken to over the years.
Right. It's just the amazing people who come in and out. I remember the first time that I worked there, I think it was in 81, and the people who just were in town or visiting, just like with you.
Exactly.
I remember, you know, seeing Michael Marr. I said, hey, Scott, you know, I was walking down the steps, and different people who didn't live there, who just were hanging
just
out there. It was
there
just
night.
A cool clubhouse, you know, kind
of
thing.
It really does feel like a club.
Mm-hmm.
And it's much like 4F in the sense it is a club and that you always see friends there.
That's right.
And you don't know who's going to be there till you show up sometimes.
Right. Usually it's the same core of people, but they might miss, like I did last year, you know, might miss, you know, the 4F one year or another. But, yeah, basically you still have that core of people who are there all the time. And with the cast, remember who it was who was working the stage?
Yeah, I can tell you who I saw and who I wasn't able to see, but close-up was Billy Goodwin and Babel. Babel is usually a 4F person, but I haven't seen him here this year yet.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the parlor, I did see a nice act that John Armstrong did. He actually did most of his cruise act, he told me, which was I had never seen him do parlor. I'd seen him do close-up.
Yeah,
that was very, very entertaining and some really interesting fooling moments in his act.
Right.
And the palace that evening was actually Jonathan Pendragon's Farewell Palace performance.
What do you mean farewell? I mean, he's done?
He says he's now retiring from the palace. I don't know if that means from stage performing per se, but moving to Vermont with his wife.
Right, with West.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So beyond that, I don't know Jonathan enough to have asked or asked questions, but it was nice to see him performing actually a large grand illusion in the palace. I'd never seen some of those things that close. The subtrunk, his clearly impossible sawing woman in fat in half.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
He did a wonderful version of the Linking Rings. And it was sort of a nice interaction with the audience back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
And it had some musical interludes, some singing. And then Siegfried was in the audience. We recognized Siegfried. Wayne Dobson was in the audience. We recognized Wayne Dobson. So I think it was just sort of a nice, I hate to call it a finish, but it felt that way, the way he was talking.
Wow.
So I don't know what his plans are beyond. But it was a nice show.
Huh. Did he perform also at the Academy Banquet or not?
He did not perform at the AMA Awards.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There was only one magician at the AMA Awards, and I feel bad I don't remember the name, who did two pieces. But mostly the acts, I remember the variety acts that they had.
Wasn't Xavier Mortimer by chance?
No. No, it was nobody that I have a lot of name recognition with that I would recognize.
Yeah, okay. All right, well, let's kind of go into something that is near and dear to your heart, and that has to do with mentalism.
Yes.
Because you are someone who is a mind reader and has been doing that for a long period of time then as well. In fact, that I think when I first became aware of you was by working with Banachek on one of the Psychological Subtleties books, and that you were had contributed idea, I think, maybe to
Psychological Subtleties. Yeah, I don't know when we first met. Maybe it was at a convention even prior to that, but I tend to go to Magic Live and then 4F, where we are now, I've been probably 26 years, and you probably go back that far, if not farther.
Well, correct. You're right. It was the 4F, because
let me
think about that. This is actually my 31st year. I have missed three times.
Okay.
1 year, I was actually working the castle because...
Okay, you know, good excuse.
Yeah, Jack Goldfinger said, hey, I need you this week, and I said, I'm going to Fecker. He said, so are a lot of other guys.
Right.
He said,
that's why we need you here.
Okay, yeah. Fine. Yeah. So I was like, okay.
Yeah, so you and I go way back, and we both enjoy. And in fact, I remember the days you used to write the reviews of the Magic Conventions in Magic Magazine for Stan. I used to love reading those, living vicariously through those.
Yeah.
Because as a hobbyist, which I still am, I'm certainly not a professional mentalist or a magician by any stretch.
Yeah.
But I've always enjoyed being with other magicians, the camaraderie of the castle, the camaraderie of Magic Conventions, particularly ones where you come back and see the same friends and make new friends year after year.
That's
particularly
true.
4F.
You're an optometrist, is that right?
Dermatologist.
Dermatologist.
Sometimes people hear dermatologist, but it's skin, dermatology. Probably there's some overlap there.
and going back that it was back at the 4F that we started doing some things. So I remember when you were performing 1 year of doing an act, you know, sitting cross-legged on the floor and having the bowls and doing kind of like a Jaduwala.
Yes, Jaduwala.
Jaduwala. Yeah. Okay.
So my main interest growing up has been close-up and then evolved into mentalism. But I started with cards, coins.
Mm-hmm.
I still do some of that. But over the last probably decade or more, I've focused more on mentalism, particularly close-up impromptu mentalism, which was sort of the focus of the book, the last book I wrote. But one of the things I also enjoy is my heritage as being born in India, even though I grew up in the States, is Indian magicians and the magic of India. And I was fortunate maybe 15, 20 years ago on a visit to India to meet some street magicians as well as some people who knew street magicians. And one of the effects they performed is one that I've never seen anybody else in the U.S. do, which is a trick where regular dry rice becomes puffed rice literally in front of your eyes.
Huh, wow.
And so I performed that maybe twice at 4F because it's such an unusual piece where a large silk is held between two spectators, much like the net and balls trick.
Mm-hmm.
And then instead of nets, cups and balls or anything like that, you take a handful of rice and literally in front of your eyes it starts to pop and expand, much like popcorn might. But it's something really to be seen, to experience, but it's a very unusual street
in
magic
in your
trick.
Hands as opposed to
being in the silk. So you hold a little,
it's
like a wicker sort of scoop is what they call it,
mm-hmm.
which is used traditionally in villages to separate the wheat from the chaff.
Mm-hmm.
So as you toss the grain in the air, the wind blows away the chaff.
Sure.
What's left behind is usually the grain. Well, in this case, as you toss the rice in the air, with this little wicker, it looked like a dustpan almost, but it's made out of wicker. It's a real instrument or a real tool used in villages. You see the rice become puffed rice, then in the end you can actually eat some of the puffed rice.
Yeah.
So it's a very unusual trick, and I've done that here in full regard, in a full regalia. In fact, what's interesting is the outfit I usually wear was my wedding outfit because I was married in a traditional Indian temple In the U.S.
In the U.S., not over there?
No, okay. In the U.S. I left India when I was two, so pretty much my whole life and career has been in the U.S.
Any family still over there? Or?
A lot of extended family, aunts and uncles and cousins, but my immediate family is here. I moved here when I was two with my parents, and then moved from Seattle to North Dakota, which is where I did most of my formative years and did my training in medicine
internship
in Minneapolis mm-hmm. in the Mayo Clinic in Rochester. And I've been in Minneapolis ever since then.
Mm-hmm. I just had chatted recently with Nate Staniforth, who had written a book called Here Is Real Magic.
And yeah, I haven't read it yet, but I'm very intrigued by the concept, and I'd like to read it.
You should. It is very interesting. Half the book, the last half of the book, is his experience in India.
Right, and I've seen some of his videos on YouTube about his India experience with street magicians.
Right. There's a video he did also then with Brian Brushwood, in which they talk about this a little bit then, too, if you want to see that. But nevertheless, yeah, I think that you would find that interesting. My point being, as I was getting to, is that it seems that the type of mystery that they do, I say they do, the street performers mm-hmm. do, is that. It's mystery and magic, but as opposed to mind reading or mentalism.
Right, you know, not like we think of mentalism, like think of a word in a book. No,
right,
it's completely
right.
different.
Right, completely different. So in doing that, is that something that, have you seen any mentalism in India? Or
I don't believe I have. I've only seen street performers, and I saw Sorkar Jr. Mm-hmm. on stage doing more of a Western act with Indian decorations in a large theater.
Yeah.
But I've never seen an Indian mentalist. I know of one friend who used to be in the Psych Entertainers Association of Indian origin who lives in India, but I've not really seen him perform. I don't know if there's a growing movement towards mentalism in India like many countries. I can't think of any real popular mentalists in India that I would know by name.
That's what I was wondering.
I take that back. I can think of a couple. I don't know them personally. But I think it is much like many countries becoming a very accepted form of entertainment for corporate work and for banquet work, things
right.
like that.
Well, I have a worldwide listening base, and I know I have people in India who listen, so somebody's going to be listening.
Right.
If you're out there and you're a mentalist, then drop me a note.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see what they're doing there.
TheMagicWordPodcast.com. Just let me know who you are. And
because they're probably reading the same books that you and I grew up on, including, we were briefly talking before we got online about the Banachek series of psychological subtleties books,
right.
and how you were involved at the start about that. In fact, I think your listeners would enjoy hearing some of those.
Yeah, yeah. You know, that was interesting because the books themselves, when and he was Steve Shaw before he became Banachek, which is kind of a funny story too, because when there was a point in his career, he said, there's something that's happening with my life and my career that I anticipate I'm going to be going in a completely different direction, and as a result, I want to change my stage name then as well. And so I'm toying around with the idea of Banachek, and I said, that probably won't work. You know, that's a silly name.
There was the TV show Banachek, right?
Exactly, right. I said there was a guy on TV with George Peppard, and he said, yeah, that's right, but he spelled it a little bit different. So anyhow, he said, I think I'm going to go with it anyhow. Well, it seemed to have worked out for him. But he was going to be, he'd spoken with Craig Snader many years ago, and Craig, I believe, was from the U.S., but lived in Mexico City. Traveled back and forth and was really more well known, I think, among the mentalists, but the bizarre world. I mean, you know, like with Tony Andruzzi and that kind of group. Yes, I think was the kind of the group that he was associated with. And Banachek was, Steve Shaw was still at the time, I guess, had just finished working with Randy and the Alpha Project and all that, you know. And anyhow, so he was going to, because he had all these ideas and things that he had written up. In fact, I've got a three-ring binder at home of ideas that are still unpublished, you know,
really?
Basically. Yeah.
From way back when
exactly.
you guys first had the concept for the book.
Right, because he was going to have this, it was going to be Tarbell's, you know, book, but it was going to be Banachek's, you know,
the Tarbell of Mentalism.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. And those books have become iconic in the mentalism world now.
As it's turned out, yeah, that because those were, the first book of Psychological Subtleties was intended just to be a tool book and, or toolbox, as he says, and just kind of the one-off, you know, type of a book. Which we had never envisioned to, you know, sell as well as it did.
Yeah, and continues to sell, I'm sure, especially knowing that you've had to do volumes 2 and 3 now. The popularity has increased.
That's right.
As well as the popularity of mentalism in general.
In general, yeah. That's true, because whenever that we'd first started our partnership, it was in 87, and he was the house mentalist at the Magic Island in Houston, and I was the house magician.
And are you still business partners?
And so we are still business partners.
Oh, very good.
Yeah, and so, you know, here we are 30 years later, you know, 31
hopefully
years
compiling Psychological Subtleties number 4 one day?
That's a good question. And there are some things that he's got in mind and some thoughts that he has and some projects that might be in mind. We've talked on and off. You know, he lived in Houston just recently, having moved to Las Vegas full time. But while he was in Houston, he still was really using Houston as a base of operations, but really working outside and traveling a lot. So, and then of course
he's still performing
with Chris
quite
Angel.
A bit.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. He had his stint with Chris Angel.
So he's spending a lot of time in Vegas. So there was less and less time that I was seeing him.
Right.
But so we really didn't get a chance just to. Get together and chat and keep up with ideas and whatnot. And we, you know, we talk with each other on the phone, but it's not quite the same as, you know, when he came over. Mm-hmm. Because, again, when we were off air, I was explaining when we were writing the book, he had written it, I was editing. And then so he came over to the house and we spent not just hours, but days and nights, you know, where that we would take apart sentence by sentence, word by word. And I would suggest, you know, that with my background in journalism, I was trying to write it with the proper grammar, and he, with his English background, you know, have spelling different than we have, and also some of the grammatical structure was different, and I was trying to rewrite that. Plus, I said, well, this didn't quite make sense. I would do it this way, and he said, no, because that's going to be magic. He said, this is not a magic effect. I want this to be a mental effect, so it's not... necessarily revealing a word, but revealing how a person thinks. And that was what the subtlety was all about, with psychological subtleties, where that you would, for an example, with a word that he would say, now jumble up the letters, and then the hard consonant is usually the one. He said, you know, then think of one of the letters, and that he would say whatever that letter would be, and they'd say yes. And so that would be amazing, because it wouldn't be, even more so, it's like, I know how you're thinking, not just what you're thinking.
He really made it feel like you were getting into their head, not just spelling it out letter by letter, but how is their mind working to pass that information to you, the process. And that was kind of a breakthrough, I think, in that book and in the ensuing books, that people really enjoyed that and made it more real to audiences.
Right, because they then, after Psychological Subtleties was published, then they came back to him saying, here are some ideas and things on how that I have...
Other contributors came in.
Exactly. And I think that was where you came in, like, with number two. It
might either number
three.
Two. I know I have several.
It was something... I think yours was, as I recall, it was the M&M.
I have an thing. M&M trick, yes, that is use equivoque.
Right.
And there's a trick based on the Maven flipping of the coin, invisible coin.
Yes.
And the yes and no. So I've had a couple of things there, so... Mm-hmm. I have stuff kind of scattered here and there throughout.
Well, do you have, I mentioned the Banchek has, you know, a binder of stuff, you know, and also there's some things he'd contributed to some other magazines and whatnot that, as Jay Marshall always said, if you want to hide something, you know, then publish
it. Bury it in print, right, exactly.
And so what he did, though, is that he had kept copies of all these things that he had published in different books and magazines and way back when they were just newsletters off a printing press.
Right. Or, which is sometimes where the best material still is.
The
older things, yes.
And so my question is, do you have a few things? I mean, you had some things that you have kind of kept a notebook of ideas?
Yeah, when I first came to 4F many years ago, 26 years ago, I think it was Bob Kohler who gave me advice. He said, bring a notebook, make notes.
Yep.
I did that for many years, and now I'm kind of at the point where I'm not actively looking for new material. So what I do is now, rather than a written notebook, I will sometimes make notes on my iPhone.
Yeah.
Just digital notes.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing I sort of eased away from is being crazy about every single lecture, taking down notes about every single trick, because as you get older, you refine your taste, your style, you kind of know what fits you, what not, what doesn't. This is why you might skip a certain lecture that doesn't appeal to you. But as time has gone on, what I did, actually probably maybe halfway into my 4F years, is I said to myself, if I come home after a day or come back to my room after a day of attending lectures, if it's something I can remember that is really pertinent, and it's got to be good enough to remember it, then I would put a note down. I would stay up an extra 15, 20 minutes and scribble some notes into my notebook.
Mm-hmm.
Now I don't even do that. Maybe I'm just getting older and jaded, or I've seen a lot of magic and mentalism.
Yeah.
But if something strikes me, I will make a note of it. I still cull from old books and magazines. I love reading old books and magazines, because there's always germs of ideas and methods that you can tweak and change different. Because I love changing presentations or coming up with a interesting presentation. That's sort of what my creative part is about now, because I'm not a huge performer in the sense of having most of my time occupied by my full-time job as a physician, but magic and mentalism is still my passion, and I love to think about it and read about it and create and attend things and meet friends like you over the years.
Well, That's good advice. And I would also recommend that other younger people be doing that very thing whenever that you go to lectures. Certainly, it's a good idea to buy their lecture notes and whatever products that the lecturers are selling in order to help support them. But also, there might be something as a germ of an idea that they might tell you that you don't want to forget.
Right. It's just inspire you or give you a thought for
exactly
later.
And to write those down. And I did that for years, and I also got a booklet.
We're getting old, Scott.
We are. And I still brought a booklet with me, but the last few times that I have come, I haven't put anything in there. Not that I haven't seen great ideas, but it's kind of like I've got an act, you know, and I've got a B and a C and a D act, you know, and things I can swap in and out.
It's got to be something that's going to be pretty stellar for you to want to consider changing things.
But not only did I just jot down some ideas, but when I started out in college, my first major was in art, and so I loved to draw. And so I would sketch out quickly, you know, hands and cards or somebody standing there, not just stick figures, but actually, you know,
maybe blocking.
I would sketch out exactly, and then also make it because John Armstrong had inspired me to read a book. There was a book online. You have to go back to this podcast with him, and I've got a link to it. I don't remember what it was, but it was for a comic book or graphic novels, basically, and how to why you should appreciate graphic novels for what they are, and that is art, and how that each artist who draws the comics, you know, in each frame of that they do it differently, and the you know, how that it might move around the page or from anyhow, it's a phenomenal and it's free, and it's in the form of a graphic novel or a comic book that talks about comics all the way through from the beginning, you know, to now in the future, that I'd recommend, and it's a free download PDF that you can but the point is that I have made my book kind of like a comic book because I've got like panels, you know, like, you know, 1, 2, 3, but they don't necessarily follow. They might go from one panel to the next or something, you know, and I've got some squares. And so as I'm doing it, I make it kind of interesting for myself as well. Plus then below the pictures I've sketched in that I will then put in some words, you know, to remind me what it was that that you're seeing then here actually, or maybe a line that someone had said that would, you know, pique my interest. And so I've got,
you got the skill set that allows you to do it that way.
Yeah,
most of it's just scrawling handwritten notes.
Right.
Yeah, didn't Ali Bongo keep very detailed notebooks like that?
He did.
Yeah.
Yes.
And he was quite an artist.
Yeah. And that's another fellow who had inspired me in many ways. And whenever I do my master of ceremonies work, both he and Gene Anderson, the ones who inspired me from the standpoint of not just saying, let's bring on our next entertainer, you know, and he'd done this and that, but to do it in an entertaining way in which you're using the letters of their name or something.
Something clever.
Yeah, right.
Something to keep the audience interest.
Exactly. That would keep people's interest. And, you know, I once did a banquet out in Caesar's Palace, and it was a 3-day event, and they had all these speakers all day long, like about 8 speakers each day, you know. And so I had arranged different ways of introducing people, and the speakers were of varying quality and interest from the standpoint that the audience was like, some would leave or want to go to sleep. But I heard over and over that what kept their interest was my introductions of them.
Perfect.
It's like, I want to see what Scott's going to do next time for this guy.
Great. And that's probably one of the jobs of the MC is not to lose your audience, right?
Exactly.
Keep them entertained and keep them in their seats.
Right. Now, some of the things that like that are in your book, you just had what's the name of the book that you had?
The book, it's a small book. It was published maybe a year and a half, 2 years ago. It's called Mysteriouser and Mysteriouser. It's sort of a takeoff on the Alice Wonderland quote, Curiouser and Curiouser. It's a book of pretty much all impromptu close-up miracles. One of the effects could be done close-up, but it was designed as a stage chair test, the classic chair test. What's the word I'm looking for? Basically, the chair test as we know it in mentalism.
Yeah, like David Berkeley's.
Yes, yes. Know? Not quite as elaborate, but
yeah, things like 9 chairs, I think.
Yeah, he had quite a few. Mine has 6 actually. But for me, it was about doing stuff that I use, because as a impromptu sort of close-up guy, I don't have stage performance time where I'm designing stuff for stage. So the things that I have in the book are all things that I would do, primarily things with business cards, one or two with playing cards. But they're things that you could just do for your friends, which is mostly my audience. I'm not at a performing venue where I'm doing strolling magic or bar magic. So
these
that's
are
kind of the
focus. More impromptu one-off kind of things?
Pretty much impromptu one-off kind of things, yep.
What's your idea on doing just one-off things as opposed to doing a series of things? In other words, if you do one thing, then that, my thinking is, might allow them to spend too much time trying to reconstruct, as opposed to if you do a second and better yet, a third thing. Because the second thing that they're still thinking about the first one, they're thinking, oh, wait, I better follow to see what he's doing now. And then by the third thing, it's like, I don't care. You know, it's just all we're good.
I think it all comes down to the venue you're in and what you're trying to get across. For me, most of the time, it is a one-off thing.
So, it depends, I guess, on what kind of a audience that you're going to be doing. If it's going to be at a bar just for some group, and that's kind of what you're talking about.
Yeah, just doing for me, just for I'll do one thing, maybe two things, because somebody knows I have an interest in magic, or they've been told that, oh, you should see Raj do that little cool mind-reading thing he does. So then I will just do one thing, maybe two. It's not a set routine where it's two or three things that are building to a climax, because that's my audience. And that's the thing I've learned over time is, as much as I'd like to learn more and more tricks, more and more ideas, I'm actually not performing in a formal setting where I need to have a set.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if I'm doing a real show, then I'm going to go ahead and plan ahead. But it's a whole different scenario. So I have no problem with doing one, just one effect, as you're asking, versus having two or three things. Hopefully the mindset that you're putting the spectator in, and when you're performing it, is here's something interesting. Here's something that I'm not going to say it's going to fool you or necessarily, or it's not there to baffle you, but something you'll find intriguing. And again, the presentation would take it away from trying to figure it out.
Do you have like a go-to thing that you would do? Or do you have something of the moment that just kind of triggers saying, oh, that reminds me, let me show you something that works organically with the situation?
Probably a little bit of both, probably more the organic thing. Okay. I'm not one to press somebody to say, oh, by the way, I have something really cool I want to show you right now. It has to be one of those things where people either prompted to ask, and I have a couple of close-up things that I do, again, mostly with business cards, that I like to perform regularly.
Anything that you could share as far as an idea that people can understand as you're trying to...
In terms of describing the effect, I think you actually mentioned one of the effects, but this effect is actually not in the book, even though in your podcast I think you said it was in the book, but I have an effect that involves a business card torn in half and a number prediction.
Oh, yeah.
We've talked about that before.
Yes.
And I have a new thing I've just been actually getting feedback on here at 4F, which I haven't shown yet, Scott, but I'm looking forward to sharing with you. It's hard to describe. It's about order and chaos, but it uses basically only four business cards.
Mm-hmm.
And the analogy that I relate it to, because so many people now are into this whole Rubik's Cube craze, and I don't do the cube, I don't solve the cube, but it's about how a lot of people now will look at a mixed cube, be blindfolded, and then pick up the cube and solve it, right?
Mm-hmm.
You've seen that done.
Yeah.
So I have a similar concept, but using only four business cards, where the cards are in sequence, and they mix the cards without me seeing them, and I'm able to get them back into sequence, akin to being blindfolded without looking at the cards.
Right, right.
So that's something I'll show you later, but it's hard to describe. But it would be something you could just, you know, grab four business cards from the hotel desk and do it.
Right.
That's the way I like to work.
Well, that's what I think is a beautiful thing about mentalism, certainly, is that it's not something that you would carry around with you.
Exactly.
It's something that's done, which seemingly is organic.
Yeah.
It's like I just, which is also one of my favorite kinds of magic, where it's going to be more improvisational, where that you're using a sugar packet from the table or a napkin or whatever that it happens to be.
Right.
You know,
you're not going to pull out your deck that's in mnemonica. By the way, I happen to have my deck of cards. Let me show you something. I'd much prefer it to be more.
That's right.
I'll grab that business card. Do you have a pencil? Do you have a pen? Let's do this, this.
Yeah, well, one thing that, you know, I had taught on a DVD was something that was kind of an impromptu thing, again, where that you would just use your table napkin and make it into a little pouch, and then by putting sugar packets in there and one sweet and low. So you have one pink one. And this way that people are reaching in, grabbing a sugar packet from the table and hold their hand, you know, in a fist. And then you are able to tell which person has the pink sugar packet, which is a great little impromptu, you know, kind of a thing.
Yeah, there's so many great little impromptu things that can be either done immediately without a lot of preparation or minimal prep work. And that it can also be given a mentalism spin if that's your focus.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, there's so much good magic out there, and being at 4F as we are, we get to see so much, and we get to really hang out and interact with people and share ideas. So I usually try to come with one new idea that I want to kind of workshop with people. So I go to people I respect who are interested in that kind of magic.
Yeah.
For example, mentalism, and say, here's a couple ideas I have. What do you think about this? Can you give me some feedback? How would you tweak it? Do you like the presentation? So that's one of the huge things about 4F is not just learning new tricks. It's coming and workshopping ideas with people who are interested in that type of magic.
Well, what is your creative muse? What is it? I mean, when you're at work, or is there something that comes up, or you're laying in bed, you think of it, or how do things come to you?
Probably older books and magazines.
Okay.
I've sometimes come up with new ideas of my own, but most of the time it's based on, I might see somebody do a card trick and say, that's a great card trick, but I don't like it as a card trick. I want to pose it more as a mind-reading effect. Mm-hmm. But certainly reading old books and magazines, you'll get a germ of an idea and then sort of expand it from there. I enjoy coming up with presentations for myself that fit my persona, who I am.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't have a particular muse other than I enjoy reading certain authors in mentalism. The modern-day ones like Barry Richardson, Max Maven, Michael Weber, Luc Jermay, these are all people who have incredible ideas.
Right.
And you can just start with their methods and sort of make them your own.
Mm. Yeah, that's a good point. But a lot of those things are not written up in magazines. It might be having lectures or lecture notes, or a few might have books or something.
Right,
but yeah, kind of going back, let's say, like the Lifesavers or something of Michael Mars or Michael Weber's, that might serve as some presentational ideas. You know, Jim Steinmeier has got some of those.
Steinmeier has the best scripting of anybody in magic.
Mm-hmm.
I will read his tricks, even though it might be a stage trick with a prop I would never use, just to read the language, the clarity, the way he writes is just unbelievable.
Yeah.
And he has published quite a few great mentalism ideas, both in the old Genie magazine when he had the Conjuring column,
In
Magic,
yeah.
and now also in Genie. So yeah, he's an author and writer I really respect for just the
clarity. But those impossibilities.
I love the impossibilities. You talk about a muse. Uh-huh. I was reading a couple of those, and I read those every couple months and keep getting new ones. So many good ideas in there. Mm-hmm. So many easy tricks in the sense of method that you can spin a tail around and make it impossible. I've fooled many magicians with a couple tricks that I have a spin on from Puzzabilities.
Even though that they probably had read the same book.
Exactly.
Yeah, put a little different twist.
Yes.
And I think that that's an important thing then too, Raj, of making sure that whenever that you do read a trick that you are, particularly I'm speaking, I guess, to young people, or I'd say those young or new to being into magic, of not necessarily taking the idea and going verbatim of what that it says in the patter.
Right.
You know,
see, that's that old controversy that keeps coming up here. Should you learn something exactly it's written? Remember the controversy in Magic Magazine where Richard Kaufman said, no, we got to learn it. When you learn a trick, learn it as it's written and do it, and then over time you do your own thing. Others would say, no, when you read a trick, make it your own from the start. Well, it's hard to make something from the start if you don't know what it is, what message you're trying to get across.
That's a good point. Yeah.
A recent analogy was, I found this interesting, my wife just started taking art classes.
Mm-hmm.
So she has an art instructor, and my wife is thinking, okay, I'm going to get good tips on technique, and I'm a beginner, you know, how do I hold my handle, what do I do with the brush? And her art instructor said, no, what I want you to do is, you have an interest, whether it's a flower or a landscape, I literally want you to make 10 of these, do it over and over and over, but, you know, do it like a copy. And through that process, you will develop your technique, your style. You'll see what you like, what you don't like, and how you do things. So she was emphasizing, even in the art world, early just repetition, much akin to somebody saying, I'm going to do the trick out of Tarbell, literally verbatim, the billiard ball trick exactly it's written. Because you have to learn the basics. You have to get the skills, the moves. Then over time, much like an artist, you'll be able to evolve and say, here's what works better for me. Here's what makes it more interesting to me and hopefully to my audience.
You're absolutely right. I had started out as an art major and changed, as I said, you know, then to journalism and advertising. But it was something that I learned that some of the early artists actually just copied other paintings of the their peers.
You gotta
at
do
the time,
work, right? You
or the classics, after that they kind of could do that, then they'd say, well, I understand that now. I understand, you know, shading or mixing of color and the light and the importance of this and that. But you know, I think I'm going to go somewhere different direction, becoming more abstract. In fact, I believe there were a lot of people who did a lot of Salvador Dali's work and such that sometimes people say, well, this is a Dali. Well, it may have been a student of Dali.
Right. But it's in that style. You'd look at it and say, oh, that looks like a Dali.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. So I can see certainly, that argument. And I think that, again, that would apply, as Richard Kaufman would say, perhaps more for those who are starting out.
Correct.
You know, but then afterwards, then you just kind of get the idea, okay, I understand that move. And, you know, I can then, and I understand the routine now that I've read that and not necessarily the scripting for it. But I think to begin with, that probably is true. In developing your ideas then also, did you come up with the idea of putting things or publishing things just because you didn't want to lose them?
No, I think when I first started publishing things, I did it because ego, right? You want to get credit for
being... Okay, sure. Yeah,
well,
that's
being,
a good point.
Yeah.
To be known for that because we've all had ideas and then later someone else is doing it. It's like, I had that idea.
And not even so much credit for the fact that I want to be credited, but establishing a name, quote unquote, if you will, in the magic world, amongst your friends, amongst your peers, people who respect you. Because my greatest joy in magic is not being a performer, as many magicians are. I enjoy being a creator and hobnobbing and mixing with people who are hopefully at a skill level greater than mine, so I can up my game. Much like a young teen magician walking into a crowd of hardcore card guys, they're not going to accept him as a peer and be able to talk to him and teach him things that he may want to learn and may not be ready to learn. So for me, starting to publish things, I think I put my first piece in Apocalypse way back in the early Apocalypse years. And then out of that, just if I developed something interesting I thought would be of interest of magicians that I thought was worthy of that, then I could say at a convention, because early on when I would go to conventions, you know, here's something I came up with and say, oh, that's cool. I've never seen that before. Well, I published an Apocalypse last year. So you get a little sort of acceptance or credibility.
That's true.
So for me, I think my passion being meeting other magicians and being able to talk to them at a certain level, it was helpful to develop that credibility by publishing magic rather than wanting to have the credit for it.
Yeah, you know, along that line, kind of a funny story going back since we are at the 4F right now as we're recording this. Many years ago, when we used to have at the Forks Hotel, I was at the bar downstairs afterwards and showing this older gentleman, I was the younger kid at the time, this trick, and it was four cards of a kind, four sevens or whatever it was. Mm-hmm. And anyhow, it was, and the guy said, oh, I like that. He said, but the way I invented it, you know, it was this. And it, the trick was called Dave's Delight.
Okay.
And so as I was doing it, you know, and I came up with the ending of it, and then this guy started, you know, showing me this, and then I looked at his name badge, and it was Dave Letterman, you know, with the D,
Letterman. Very creative guy.
Very creative
actually
guy.
Actually in the mentalism world as well.
Yeah. But I, it was, again, one of my earlier years, I didn't know who he was, and I didn't know that he was the creator of that.
Exactly. That happens all the time, I think, where people show you something, and it's a variation of somebody else's idea, and that guy's sitting right there, standing right there.
Yeah, saying, well, yeah, this was my idea or something. So that's why I think it's important, you're right, then, to put some things in to also give you that credibility, because that also spurs other people's ideas then to stand on those shoulders, you know.
But it broadens your network. It's sort of like networking in a sense that people who are at an interest level that you are, will read those type of magazines or books and say, oh, I'd like to meet that guy, or next time I'm at a convention, I should seek that guy out and talk to him.
Yeah.
Because we're on the same mindset.
Well, as a part-time professional, I guess, in the standpoint that you have a full-time profession as a physician, do you see yourself retiring at any point to do that on a full-time basis?
You know, I start thinking about that now that I'm older. I've been in my medical career 30 years. I'm not ready to retire yet. I'm still relatively young in terms of my career.
Mm-hmm.
I have thought about, would I want to perform more as I get older? And I think the answer is maybe.
Okay.
I still enjoy what I enjoy the most, which
is
reading, keeping up with it, sharing with friends, brainstorming with friends. I am doing something new for me, which is I'm doing a new stage mentalism set. We have a new venue in Minneapolis called Sunday Night Magic.
Yeah, the John Gaspar told me about.
Yeah. So Suzanne is involved. Just everybody
Suzanne,
knows.
Right.
So they've asked me to do a set there in May. And as part of that, I didn't want to do cards and close-up and coins. I wanted to do mentalism, but without any coins or without cards, a non-card mentalism thing. So I've been developing a 15, 20-minute piece that's just all mentalism for stand-up. So that kind of stuff I would probably want to do intermittently. But my joy, again, is less about performing, more about thinking and writing and creating and brainstorming.
Mm-hmm.
So I will perform probably a bit more, but no aspiration to give up one field and transition to become more and more of a performer.
Yeah, yeah. Well, interesting. Well, I tell you what, we start to wrap up over here. Of course, as you know, it's called the Magic Word Podcast. So what would be your magic word or phrase?
I can't remember what I gave you maybe 5 years ago.
Yeah.
We talked
it
for
changes.
Let's see here. Magic word, magic phrase.
What's your philosophy of life?
I would say kindness,
mm-hmm.
you know, because in the world now as well as in the magic world, there's so many situations that are irrelevant to the big picture, petty arguments, petty fights about crediting. and then in the real world of politics and stuff. So, I mean, my credo to live by is be kind to others, be nice to others, mm-hmm. be fair. Playing fair to me is very important. Listening to others, I tend to be more of a listener than a talker, which is fine. I'm mm-hmm. content with that role.
That comes perhaps from your physician background. You know,
yeah, that's probably true. I have to listen all day and have to be able to communicate back and forth. But my wife knows when I come home from a long day at the office, the last thing I want to do is start talking. I've been talking all day. I'm kind of worn out, right? And I've heard patients' complaints all day, so I don't want to have to come home and say, oh, by the way, the sink is plugged. You know, the plow guy didn't come to plow the snow. So that kind of stuff. But yeah, I think for me, it's all about kindness.
Being kind.
Yeah, being kind to your fellow man.
That's good. Be kind to your fellow man. Well, good. Thank you, Raj, very much.
My pleasure, Scott. Always great to see you at 4F and any other conventions we get to.
Anytime we get a chance to spend time together. Appreciate
it. That's great. All right.
Very
thanks.
Creative guy. Hope you guys got a lot out of that. I certainly did. That's great. Thanks a lot.
You are welcome.
So for the Magic Word Podcast, that was Raj Madhok, and this is Scotty out. I want to again thank Raj Madhok for being my guest this week on the Magic Word Podcast. It was wonderful to have an opportunity to chat with him. I always enjoy sitting down with him. Again, whether he's showing me a magic trick or some mentalism effect, it's really great. And a lot of these things that he has come up with, he has published. He shared with the Magic and Mentalism Fraternity. And one of the places where he has shared this is in his book, Mysteriouser and Mysteriouser. And for those who might be wondering about the content of the book, let me tell you that it is about close-up mentalism, and 88% of it, as he says in the book, is impromptu. The other 12% uses chairs and stuff. Yeah, kind of cool. Speaking of impromptu stuff, by the way, that's the majority of my lecture. I had recently gone to Murphy's Magic Supply, sat down and did an at-the-table lecture, and I believe that they're going to be releasing that in June. So if you want to listen to over three hours of me talking, as if you haven't heard me enough, I believe that's going to be available through the Magic Word Podcast in our Magic Store, where you can go and order a copy of my lecture from At the Table, which is, again, mostly impromptu type of material. So, if you would like to join in on the contest for a chance to win one of two ebooks, then go to themagicwordpodcast.com, this week's episode, number 425, and there you will see a form you can fill out, and in doing that, you will also then automatically be signing up for the newsletter through MailChimp, which I send out weekly as well to let everybody know what's coming up. It's just a very brief thing. If you decide you want to unsubscribe from that list, you can do that easily as well. It's just something I think that you would enjoy getting, and it's very brief, won't take up much of your time, and it only comes out weekly, just as this podcast does, just as a reminder and to let you know what is being talked about on this week's podcast. Well, again, go to this week's podcast and you can enter that contest. And if you are a winner, the cool thing about this is, since it is a download, then there is no shipping involved, meaning that it doesn't matter whether you live in Australia or Iowa. You know, that this is something that as long as it's not void by law where you live, then it's legal to enter the contest, then please do. All right, well, now it's time for a couple of product reviews from those things that are coming to us from Murphy's Magic Supplies. These are also available from your favorite magic dealer, which include themagicwordpodcast.com. Just go to our website, and there you can enter the Magic Store, and everything we review is here on the page and available for you to go ahead and purchase if this is something that sounds like that it would fit for you. Today we have two separate podcast reviews that I want to tell you about of some things that I had recently unwrapped. By the way, if you go to our Facebook page, the Magic Word Podcast, and like our page, you'll find out about these things from time to time, because I just did an unboxing of these effects a couple of them I'm going to show you today, and then in future weeks we'll be explaining or rather reviewing a couple of more of them. But today we're going to talk about the 52-1 deck, which is a gimmick, and also online instructions that comes from Wayne Fox and David Penn. Next, we're going to be talking about Snitch, which is was produced by Peter Egnick from Holland Magic. So, let's get started. The 52-1 deck, which actually comes to us from World Magic over in the UK, is
a phenomenal deck. There are a lot of things that you can do with this. I really like this a lot. This is something that is kind of gimmick to the hilt. This is certainly not something that you would use in your normal everyday kind of performing, but it is something that if you just do a cold deck switch and you can put this in or use this as a featured piece or something, there are a variety of things you can do with this. First of all, let me explain the effect, which that you can, on the table, just spread out the cards and they can verify every one of the cards are all completely different. Complete deck of 52. Very well. You then put the deck back together, you square it up, and then ask someone to help you. You're going to have them think of a card. Just look at and think of any card. You then spread the deck out then again, say look at any card, think of that card, you put the deck back together, square it up, leave it there, and then without any fishing really to speak of, just ask if you said your card was a high card, correct? And depending upon their answer, then you can, this is amazing, you can cut to a card, just cut down so far, and then you say, what is your card? Without any other fishing, just, and they say, the two of spades. You then just show that the card is the two of spades that you had just cut to. Amazing, just like that. Queen of hearts, whatever it happens to be, that you actually have cut to that card. Now, then you can repeat it again. Say, I want you to look at another card. This time you took a low card, just look at or think of a higher card. They do that, and then you can cut to it again. Third and final time, they actually cut to their card. Amazing. I mean, it's as clean as that, and it's rather bold, but it works, and it is it's very straightforward. No fishing, in which that you, I say fishing, no forcing, in which that you are taking the cards in your hand, say pick a card, and then you force the card on them. You've got the cards fanned out. They look at it. Now, that's just one of the effects. There are some other effects that are explained on the explanation of their online instructions, and it has a wonderful idea from my friend Steve Valentine for a stage performance in which you have a couple of people come up and that they look at a card, and then you can pluck the cards out and you have essentially read their minds. Very straightforward, very powerful. Another one that they explain is one in which that's kind of like a tossed out deck, but not exactly. It's up on the stage and you ask people to come up and they just look at the cards. They look at a card and kind of as they line up, and then you tell them what cards they're thinking of. With a powerful climax then as well. This is a very straightforward deck of playing cards and very direct mentalism type of a thing also, or magic, however that you want to present this, I guess. And it is something that doesn't have to be cut. There are other kinds of things in which that you can apparently show how that you can cut to any, you memorize the deck, or that, and you can cut to a card that you've memorized, or that you can cut to a certain number of cards, different things like that. But you don't have to do the cutting at all. It can be a variety of things. I'm just saying that this 52-1 deck is really good. It's exciting. The caveat that I would say about this, although that you can do this on stage, it does require a table where you can spread the cards. Although you could fan them out and let them take a look at the cards, but the fact that it's in your hand, again, kind of to the audience, might make them think that you are influencing their decision some way or another, whereas that if you can actually fan the cards out, that is, spread the cards on a table, then you've walked away. I mean, they've got a complete selection of any of the cards that they can look at. And again, first time they look at the spread of cards, 50 complete deck of 52 cards. Amazing. So it's a well-constructed deck, and there are some, again, bonus features that are in there, as well as a few other, since the instructions first came out, they've included a few more extra bonus cards for revelations that you can do. So it's something that I certainly would recommend, and I think that you would like. It's something that you can do strolling. It's something that you can do repeat. It's good particularly for restaurants if you've got a little bit of a table area where you can spread out the cards. Or if you need to, again, that you can just kind of fan them and have a card selected. And so, again, recommended. And it's from World Magic. And it's a creation then of Wayne Fox and David Penn, and it's called The 52-1 Deck, and I like it. Next up, it's Magic from Holland and a cool little trick called Snitch by Peter Egink, E-G-G-I-N-K, Egink. Okay, it's the best way. I think I got it pronounced correctly, Peter. Sorry. Anyhow, the effect here for Snitch, let me just read this as it says on the box. Any card is selected and signed by the spectator. After your favorite routine, the card magically disappears from the pack. From your pocket, you produce a small sealed airmail envelope that was mailed to you, and when the envelope is open, the spectator signed card is found inside. As he says here on the box, that Peter Egink's Snitch is a beautiful and powerful card-to-impossible-location routine for the real worker. Well, I have to agree that this is a pretty powerful and unique idea. This is something that instead of having a card-to-wallet, card-to-an-envelope, well, this is a card-to-envelope, actually, but it is kind of an impossible location. And it gives you a couple of different ideas. Essentially, that the basic idea is that a playing card is freely selected, freely signed. The cards are returned to the box. The signed card then is also put back in the box. As you reach for your pocket to get out a Sharpie for them to kind of tap the deck, then they do, and they take the deck out of the box, and their card is gone. You reach cleanly in your back pocket. You have nothing in your hands, and you remove then a small airmail envelope. Now, this is using Tyvek, which is that kind of paper that's nearly impossible to tear, the kind that a lot of express mail envelopes. You understand what I'm talking about. Nevertheless, it's just a small, about the size of a playing card, and it has a little sticker on it. You open the sticker, they remove the card. You can show that it's not on the bottom of the... I mean, it's not stuck to the card. It's actually inside the envelope. If you wish, you can hand out the envelope and let them take the card, their signed card, out of that envelope. It just happens that quickly. It's very well made. A couple of nice props that are some things that you can put together quickly. A couple of suggestions or thoughts that I have on this. I will say that there are some magnets involved. And unfortunately, there are only two magnets, which you only need one with reverse polar sides this way that it will work. But if you happen to lose one, you're kind of out of luck. So it would be nice if they actually included an extra one in case that you did lose it. Because, again, without one of them, if it does happen to be lost, then you're out of luck and the trick's not going to work. And I mention that because that the other gimmick that this is attached to is supposed to be taped on there with some sort of double stick tape. And the first time that I was I hadn't yet performed it while I was practicing it, however, that the magnet came loose. Fortunately, it got stuck to the gimmick, so I found it, but I was afraid it was going to be flying across the room and probably stuck to something. I lost it forever. So what I would suggest is that maybe in the future they might think about sending an extra set of magnets, or at least one magnet. And if nothing else, here's my suggestion if you purchase this effect, and that is instead of using the sticky stuff to attach it to the gimmick that's included, I would recommend perhaps just going ahead and taking some Gorilla Glue or something and gluing that sucker right in there, so this way that it doesn't accidentally come out. So there's a little tip I would say on this, so this way that you don't lose it and you're not afraid of destroying the trick such that you can't use it then again until you find another magnet, because the magnet has to be the right size, right diameter, width, etc., in order for this to work properly. It's a nice little gimmick, a nice idea. He also includes an idea that doesn't use a deck of cards. One of the other issues that I had, or a little bit of a problem, is that when I perform personally, when I'm doing strolling or cocktails, even in restaurants, oftentimes I will wear a jacket. Now, occasionally when I'm working in a restaurant, then I might be a little bit more casual with just a vest. But even so, that's what he's suggesting, is that you should, this is more for the casual performer, I believe, specifically meaning that if you are wearing blue jeans, you're wearing a shirt which is not tucked in because it needs to kind of cover the gimmick that you've got attached to your body. without going into too much more detail here, but essentially it's something that, and also that you put the Sharpies in your side pocket. I'd also recommend that if you're going to be doing this, it has to be the kind of pocket that is going to be straight across as opposed to the one that's going to be at a slant on the side pocket. So if you are wearing some dress trousers, it's more likely than not that you have the slant type of pocket as opposed to that just horizontal cut pocket that are more typical like with blue jeans. If you know what I'm talking about there. The point is that you've got the Sharpie there, and it's important to the working of this trick that the Sharpies are placed in your pocket like that. It doesn't matter if you're left hand or right hand, you can adjust however. He does this, of course, for a right-handed person. And what I don't like about this, I guess, is is that if I'm performing formally, it would seem unnatural for me to have a Sharpie in my pant pocket. It typically would be in my jacket pocket, inside or outside my pocket, or my jacket, that is. And for this to work, again, it has to be coming out of your pants pocket. There might be some way that you can kind of fiddle around and make this work differently, but this really, I think, is something that's going to be more for someone who wants to work in more of an impromptu situation. Now, I will also say that you can work around it as long as there's no one directly behind you, and I mean directly. Now, you can kind of work in, I'd say, a 350 degree, but not 360. People can be to your left and right, but not immediately behind you for this to really fool them and to work properly. It's a cool trick. Certainly look great on television from a one-dimensional plane, just kind of looking straight on, two-dimensional plane, I guess, and looking straight on at you. There are some angle problems that I would mention on that. With those provisos, I would say that I recommend this effect, again called Snitch, by Peter Egink. It's well made. It's a cool idea. Am I going to use this regularly? There are a lot of other things that are impossible, card to impossible location, that are equally as good, or in my opinion, better, ultimately to the spectator. I mean, being inside of a signed or sealed envelope. And this is just another card to sealed envelope. It's clever, and if you're looking for something a little bit different, this is what it is. And if you've got a presentation that might go with something having to do with receiving mail, international mail or something like that, and you've got a routine that it would fit in with the rest of your act, this could be a good little idea. It would look good, I think, on stage as well, except that the envelope, again, is the size of a card, so it just fits perfectly. So it wouldn't be a great trick for stage, definitely, but parlor, maybe, but close-up for sure in certain situations. So with that, I would say I would give it my reserved recommendation. And again, that's by Peter Egink, and it's Magic from Holland, and it's called Snitch. Well, there are two reviews for this week, and I do want to add one more little thing, and that is if you were watching my unboxing of the effects I had received from Murphy's Magic Supplies, included with that 52-to-1 deck was another deck of playing cards with some sort of modern design on it. It looked like some sort of abstract design, and I didn't know whether that deck actually was something that came in conjunction with the 52-to-1 deck, and that's what you receive, but no, you don't. Actually, the 52-to-1 deck is just that. It's just you get the one deck. The other thing was separate. They just happened to have boxed those together. I will point out that the deck that you did see is nothing more than just that. It's just an elegant with a designed deck with kind of an abstract motif on it. Murphy's has a lot of different designs that come out from time to time, and I've been sent these, and they are just nice little working decks if you want to use something that's a little bit different design, certainly. Or if you're a card collector, might be something worth looking into. I'm not sure what the deck is called. It doesn't have any name on it. Whenever I opened it and looked at it, it didn't have a name on there then either. So it's just a cool little deck that feels good to shuffle then as well. Well, those are my reviews of a couple of items, and hopefully that will help in making your purchase decision when you decide to spend some of your money on the next magic tricks. And you should go over to themagicwordpodcast.com, check out the magic store, and there you can see all the things that we have reviewed over the years from Murphy's Magic Supplies. Well, that's all for this week, and I hope that you've enjoyed this podcast, and we're going to be having more coming up next week, and you can read about it on the newsletter you'll be receiving if you sign up for the contest. And by the way, you don't have to sign up for the contest if you would like to be on subscribe to the newsletter. Just send an email to me at scott@themagicwordpodcast.com and request, put me on the newsletter list, and I will subscribe you. And again, if you don't want on, you can get off very easily. You can unsubscribe. But I think that's probably enough for this week, and I'm going to let it go there. And so until next time, stay well, get booked, and be kind to others. This is Scotty out.